Okay, I think we're going to try to get things rolling here. Hopefully the lunch is settling in your stomachs okay. Absolutely thrilled that Alan Levine has once again come to Northern Voice. He lives in Arizona. He has made the trip to Northern Voice 5 of 7 years. And every single year he's done an absolutely fantastic presentation. So I'm quite excited, and I hope you guys all enjoy it. So Alan's been doing some of the coolest stuff going, loosely related to the fields of education and media for years. I almost am at a loss to try to describe any more than that, so I'll just get the hell off the stage. But before I do, let's give him a great welcome. Are we okay?
Yeah, apparently we've had a request to bring the light down here. We're going to bring the light down.
That's just right. Don't turn the projector off. Or make the screens go up and down. Hi. My name is Alan, and I'm a photographer. Oh, that's a different talk. Oh, no, it is this talk. I'm going to talk about, not about cameras and the technical aspects of it, but more about my relationship with cameras and maybe your relationship cameras. So I'm just going to get right into it. For a lot of people, photography seems hard. Does anybody feel like this? Like it's complex? Maybe not in this group. We got a lot of pros in the room, but it really shouldn't be hard, and in fact, it should be fun. So, you know, I look at this guy, and he's like smiling. He's got the big honking camera. You know, he's got the pro Canon lens. If you read the chair, he's somewhere like in South Africa. He's a professional photographer. And the quote on this, I hope he's not in the room. But, you know, I like the first part. Photographer is a person who takes a photograph using a camera. That's pretty obvious. But a professional photographer uses photography to say, I exist. That's kind of cool, right? Bullshit, okay? That's not right. I mean, to me, and maybe I'm wrong, help me out. Professional means you get paid for doing something that probably other people do. And I could have a whole tangent about the oldest profession, but really a pro. So like most people at this conference, I dig all my photos from Flickr. So amateur photograph, to me, this person says, I exist. I mean, they're making a statement here. Look at this girl. You know, are you going to say she doesn't exist? I just love this portrait and the composition of it. And this guy, he's in pain because he's not a professional photographer. He exists. So photography, obviously, is booming, a big part of it. We've already had great examples. Great talk yesterday on Instagram. I love the photos. And this post that I got some quotes on talked about Instagram and what it meant. These couple are just from a guy who's pretty prolific, a colleague I met in Australia, Kim Flintoff. He's in Japan now. And his photos just typify what people do with Instagram. They're not doing the Facebook-type photos of trying to capture what they're doing and who they are. They're just capturing these little intricate moments of things you wouldn't notice. You know, you're just walking up an escalator and you're mesmerized by the boots or the lines in a park bench. And it's that easy to share something. So this quote from this thing on the Next Web about maybe Instagram is creating this sort of new place for people to be photographers who might not think of themselves as photographers. So Northern Voice, I know there's a lot of cameras. Who has a camera here? Okay. I'm not talking about these big honkers again, okay? I know you got them. I don't have a big one, but I got that. But, you know, what we're really talking about is these and the standard line now about, you know, the best camera is the one in your hands. Of course, we love that statement. But you know the worst camera? It's the one you left at home when you're out there and you don't have anything. Has anybody done that? We're like, or they have the phone and you just said you hesitated and you missed that moment, or you questioned whether it was appropriate to sneak. Does anybody sneak pictures with their mobile phone? I'm really scared of taking pictures in public, and I'm always doing the, oh yeah, I'm just checking my email. Does that fool anybody? I've never asked. So I wanted to play a little exercise to have you do something. So a lot of mobile phones in this room, obviously. So take out your mobiles, if you can, and take a picture. Just turn around and take a picture of someone you don't know. And as quickly as you can, send it to this email address. That's sip44second@photos.flickr.com. And I'm going to play a little video while that's going, just quickly. This video is from this neat little site called Pummelvision, and it takes a Flickr stream or Flickr set, and it makes a little video out of it. It's probably about the easiest way to make a quick photo show out of your Flickrs. These are mine from some of my daily stuff. And you guys are taking photos, some people I see. Does anybody need to have the address up on the screen a little bit longer?
Yeah.
Okay. I just want to go like at bullet speed because I got like hundreds of photos to show. But this is good. Does anybody else use the emailing photos to Flickr is a great way. I don't have this sent to my main account. I have one of my many fake Flickr accounts. But this is really good for workshops. As a, you know, I've experimented with some different ways to get people in the same space to share their photos. And if anybody has other ideas for how to do that, maybe I've used Dropbox a couple times. But I like it that it goes right to Flickr. Who needs more time? Anybody know any good jokes? Every joke I've heard that's been told to me, I forgot. I am the worst joke teller in the universe.
You
want a
joke?
Yeah, tell me a joke, Mikhail.
What's brown and sticky?
I'm afraid to ask that. What's brown and sticky?
A stick.
You don't have kids, do you? All right, everybody, I'm going to move on. This is not really critical that we have this. I just wanted to maybe just ask you, when you're taking a picture like under pressure of time or you're trying to do it quick, how much thought do you, is it just quick snap sort of thing? Who's thinking about their framing, their composition, getting their subject to pose, also the sorts of things. So the big link for this, Flickr.com, photos, I'm also auto-tweeting out the links to all this stuff, and it's also on the URL that'll flash up at the end. So all the URLs are preserved, but what happens with our cameras? And I'm really intrigued by this because sometimes we think we just look through it and press a button and it captures something. And to me, by doing a lot of photography, and I say a lot, but I really haven't done a lot because I'm still learning. But I think a lot about, like, it's more than just looking and going through there. You know, when I'm really focusing on trying to capture an image, sometimes I like to think a while before I have it, especially if it's a still subject. And part of me, is interacting with that image. And I just found this blog post recently from a photographer named Guy Tao. And he really has a strong statement about, he's trying to argue the case that photography is art. But it's not just art when you just take the picture. That really a piece of you goes into the making that art. And really, a good photograph should be something that really would be hard or impossible for someone else really to capture the same. So you're trying to bring, at your best photography maybe, a new experience to something that everybody else can obviously see, but you see in a different way. So, I see trash laying in the street, and I think, wow, that's interesting, or different ways to put things together. So a small example, not really maybe the best, but I was in New York City last weekend, and I'm walking around, and New York City is just, tons of sensory input for photography. And I walked past this photo gallery. I wish I had went in because I looked it up online later. This Morrison Hotel, my first thought is, of course I'm a Doors fan, and I wanted to take a snapshot, and I was like, that's kind of boring. So I thought, maybe, and this is because I have a little bit of knowledge, I'm going to, set my settings so I get a slow shutter speed because I'm curious what would happen with the cars making some sense of motion. And I took about five, and most of them didn't work out, but this just happened to be this kind of couple standing here and this woman standing behind, and to me it's like, wow, now there's some interesting layering going on. So I played with this with, there's a site on Flickr called Six Word Story, which is the play on the Hemingway exercise. So I make up a story of this. So, a couple on the street, maybe they're arguing, about the woman behind, and he got caught checking into the Morrison Hotel. So, but, you could look at it and interpret it completely differently. But I really enjoy that with photography, is going a little bit farther. So my experience now that I think about it, when we look through the lens, and that's the title of my talk, and it doesn't have to be really the kind of lens that you look through. Really part of us, I like to think, goes out and part of the world comes into the scene. So I want to talk a little bit about some cameras and metaphors. And really I kind of set this talk up to talk about learning, but it goes for a lot more things. I just want to give another great shout out to Derek Miller. When I did the first version of this talk in February, and every time I search on Flickr for pictures of cameras or search online for articles, I end up with Derek's stuff. So there's about six of them in my talk here. So what happens when we are looking through that camera? So you know, you might not buy this one, but, you know, aperture, you know, you control the size of the hole that light comes in. So sometimes out in the world, we kind of go out with big, wide perspective. We're taking it all in. And that's a really different thing that happens when we tighten down the focal length and we're just getting kind of the beeline perspective. So aperture, letting light in, aperture, sort of our attitude in looking at the world. And of course, with aperture, you know, with photographers, you can do things. Your eye does not see the dog like this. Your eye sees everything in focus from the puppy's nose all the way out to infinity. But because of the photographer's ability to sort of frame the shot, you get a more powerful image than what you don't see in the real world. I mean, this guy is flying, and you can, you know, see his full expression, but he's pulled out from the world. Low aperture lets you do these things like with light, and you get the bokeh effect. See, it's not possible. Go the other way. You know, if you're really, you know, going out in the world with, you want to see things in near distance and far, you know, hopefully sometimes our attitudes are like that, so we can see things both in the near and far. Like this example, I can read the barcode on that, whatever that device is, but everything else is still in focus for me. But we can use aperture and photography to really draw attention. And this photograph wouldn't work, obviously, just like the little puppy if everything was in focus. At the same time, this is kind of like my photo. I don't know what this person intended, but I'm just kind of amazed by this photo. There's something going on here. If I focused and made him the center focus, it would be a different picture. But this photographer used their aperture settings to make sure the woman and the dog and the sailboat got in focus. At the same time, I feel like I want to make up a story about this picture. You know, what's this guy dreaming about, and what's this woman thinking? So shutter speed, the other end of the dimension, you know, how much attention we give to things in the world. Does it go fast? Does it go slow? So, of course, when we're doing our photography, we use shutter speed to create different effects. And again, these are one of Derek's sets of pictures that show the difference between shutter speed. You guys probably know this, but the same water fountain has a completely different effect when we sort of do the long, slow piece and let it go flow by slow, blah, blah, blah. Flow by slowly versus when we do it quick to capture action, and maybe our attitudes in the world do the same thing. With the camera, we can use the shutter speed to see things we really couldn't see with our naked eye. You know, you don't really see this when you're spilling your coffee, but there's like this whole micro world that could possibly happen when we go to a fast shutter speed. And the way, you know, do we really know what happens when the cue stick hits the ball? You know, the camera allows us to see a part of the world, in this case, that we can't see with our eyes. You know, if you're looking at things like flames or water patterns, when you freeze the action, you know, you can't really see the detail of this with just your plain eye. And then, of course, when you go the other way, you get art. There's a whole group, as there are many obscure groups on Flickr, of dashboard photographer. You know, and I don't know if this guy does it when he's driving. Somebody take pictures when they drive? I admit it, I do it. I'm totally safe. I don't text when I drive, but I'm looking at the road, you know? I'm taking pictures. That's really bad. I shouldn't admit it, but there's sometimes I'm going along the road and there's a sunset, and I like the road angle, the perspective you get behind the wheel. I know I shouldn't do it, but slow shutter speed and lights give you all kinds of wacky effects. This is a great self-portrait. You know, the typical we think of self-portrait being able to see the whole person, but this person said, you know, I'm going to use the effect of slow shutter speed to create a different effect, a more dreamy effect. You know, you can see his blurred motion, and I think that's really powerful. ISO, or film speed, used to be how we used to try to get, you know, better pictures in low light. So I think of that as maybe our sort of sense of perception of the world. So when we turn our own personalities up to high ISO, we may be able to see more, but maybe we get a little bit more, maybe more pixelated in our thoughts. So with photography, you know, you can get things that you can't really see. You know, the ability to take this picture in low light and you get the color effects, again, that your eye doesn't see. I almost never use my flash on my camera. I really like to use the high ISO and the low apertures, because the portraits you get without that flash are really more intense, and you couldn't really get street photography like this, and it really makes a more humanizing picture. The ability to take pictures really in dark places, like clubs, and of course you lose the detail, but in some sense that kind of gives a heightened sense of what the feeling was. That, I don't know, does anybody try to get a more gritty feeling on purpose with their photos? You know, I know with my Canon, you know, it's crazy shooting at like 128,000 ISO, but you know, sometimes it does the right thing. The way we look at the world, we frame it. When we take a picture, we make deliberate decisions on what to include and what not to include, right? And also in post. I almost edit every photo in post. I got to crop everything and rotate everything. There's some purists out there who say, you got to get it right in the camera. I'm like, no, if I do, I'm lucky. If not, there's always some tweak in post. But the way we look at the world is different. There's many ways you could take this picture, but to me, this picture really works because of the angle I took. If I went from the side, it would be different. It might not work quite the same. This one's great. You know, it's not exactly the rule of thirds, but if you said, I want to take a picture of a horse in the field, typically you think, you know, portrait of the side, profile of a horse. But this, to me, is just so much more dramatic and unusual. It jumps out at me. You see at the fair someplace, some guy holding balloons, and some people thought maybe I want to get a whole picture of the guy with the strings on the balloons, but you get something really more powerful in this case just by cropping out everything out of the scene. A lot of people just like to look for different light angles. You might walk by this. I actually know where this is. It's a museum in Scottsdale, Arizona, and typically it's a place people walking, they don't notice, but this photographer looked up and said, wow, I just love shadows. Is anybody into shadows? You know, I can't stop taking pictures of shadows because, you know, and everybody's just walking by them. They're missing them. It's like a secret world out there in the open. And you get accidents. You guys are laughing, right? I love this photo. And I read the caption on it. And he, you know, of course, another genre in Flickr are these people who take pictures of Star Wars action toys. And he was actually trying to do a deliberate setup of Darth Vader here. And his cat happened to walk by. And his first thought was like, you know, get out of the way, bleep, 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 bleep. But, you know, to me, it's just like totally makes a picture because it's two worlds that don't belong together. But, you know, his framing and composition really changed that. Obviously, good lines, perspective shots. I might be looking here and saying, I wish those people would move because I just want to get the lines. But, you know, when I went back and looked at it, I said, you know, it actually works better, you know, with those people because I want to know who they are or maybe where they're going or what the story is there. So sometimes you get lucky that way. So taking pictures, a little quiz. What's wrong with this picture? And don't say anything about the lack of fashion because that's me at age 11. But you know, this is what a snapshot is, and this is what a lot of people do, right? You know, you put the kid in the center. You know, what else is wrong here? The pants are bad, okay? The pants are really bad. White shirt and a white background, yeah. You got the line, the rail through the neck and the other one through the head.
Extraneous detail off to the side.
Yeah, you know, I said that to someone. Someone else said they liked the detail in the background, but to me, it is extraneous. So, you know, and of course, I'm not going
to
blame my mom for taking
the...
Yeah, yeah.
Try to bring a little bit more contrast on the art so I can see that and leave that detail in because I really like it.
It's funny that we have different opinions on it. And in 1973 or whatever.
Somebody fall down the stairs.
Yeah. Put the railing back when you're done photoshopping it. Thanks. But, you know, you couldn't do that in 1973. You were stuck with this. And it's not a bad... I like the picture. Well, I don't like the picture, but... But, you know, compare that, you know, and a lot of people probably recognize Chris Krug's picture. This is his son. You see this a lot when you log on the Flickr. It's one of the most common pictures. It's just beautiful. I mean, and he's done... Of course, he's a pro, but, you know, take lessons, obviously. You know, a lot of times when we photograph people, we don't think... I often try the crop. You know, you get a really dramatic effect when you crop the top of the head out. You know, and it's not exactly, you know, it's not sharp, detailed focus, and the softness of it makes it a really warm portrait. And I encourage you to read this blog post where this guy interviewed Chris about the portrait. It's a really moving story, but on its own, it's a world of difference. And I'm not criticizing you, Mom. You're just not a professional photographer. But snapshots, okay? And I got some of these pictures, you know, and I don't post them, but... And I found a lot of them by searching on Flickr for family vacation or family beach. So I wanted to look at something that was your typical snapshot. Now, you know, I'm not going to criticize the person for this picture. They took it for a reason. I don't know what it is. But to me, it's like, is that how I want to remember the beach? And there's so many little things you can do to make, you know, beach shots better. So, you know, just shifting your angle, using the light, simplifying things, moving closer. You know, this might be staged, but this is a warm action shot. The first one is an action shot, but this one has such a better sense of what's going on at the beach. And again, combining things that you do with depth of field totally here makes this work for a really moving beach picture. And then, of course, you know, photos lend themselves to story. And my friends know that's, you know, all I like to do with pictures is to make up stories about them. So, you know, I like to look at pictures I don't know about. And what's going on with this girl? I mean, who is she? What's in the field? You know, is there something else in the grass out there? You know, I like pictures that make me question. You know, this one, there's obviously a lot of emotion going on. Super powerful. But obviously the crop in makes it really effective. Did I take the blue pill by mistake? And why is there fuzz on the carpet? I don't know. You know, I want to know what exactly is this argument? You know, I think she's losing the argument here, or she made him laugh so hard. There's a story. I don't know what to make of this photo. and I mean, my favorite thing is to find weird things and take pictures of them. So I dig that. I think this is the start of an ARG, but also, what's in the white van? You know, who's watching you? This is just really clever. You know, if you're walking down the street and you see a sign on the post, you know, you don't always think of that as an opportunity, but someone consciously said, you know, I can make this picture tell a story. I like to think, maybe it really was the person just taking a picture of their lost rabbit poster, but I don't think so. Again, lights and things you can do with a sense of mystery. A powerful message. We see this a lot now, especially not only in picture but on YouTube. This is a severely emotional picture. It just moves me. So, how's my time? All right. Find a little bit about context. And this is a little bit of relevance now as people clamoring for a picture to tell the truth about certain dead people that I won't name. But there was a column in the New York Times by Errol Morris where he kind of posed this question about does a photograph really tell the truth? And he started out by, he was looking at family photos, old family photos, and he knew the stories behind them because it was his family. And I don't know if you've ever gone to, like, you know, thrift stores and they have like this basket of random people's photos. And it's like, you don't have any context for those photos. You don't know what the story is. So he goes on to say, okay, here's a picture of a ship. It has no caption. You know, and you can look at it and say, obviously it's an old ship, right? But what do you do with it? And he said, simply by putting a caption on it, the Lusitania, all of a sudden now there's context for it. You know, this was the ship that went down and got the U.S. into World War I. It was a very dramatic thing. But he also brings out some example of newspaper ads that we can get some more context now by having that caption. But in the Times, the context was much more severe because everything that was going on was related to this awful event that happened. So he's really making a strong case that without captions, or you can add it to be metadata on photographs, it's almost meaningless, and it certainly doesn't really tell us what's the truth. So one of my gripes on Flickr, and I can't really say it's someone's decision, but you come across something, and all you know about it is IMG_459. I know people upload fast, and this is my preference, but I'm ruthless about captioning and writing titles. And when you look at this, all right, when I looked at it, it had one view. That might have been me. there's no tags. It's all rights reserved. Now, that's their decision. Probably they didn't know the default setting that they could change it. And I'm not really criticizing Mr. Or Mrs. Oh, it's Rob's What's Up. Are you in the room, Rob? I've had that happen before. But there's really, I mean, it's fine. You can do whatever you want on Flickr. I don't care. But to me, we add a lot more, in this case, when we can add all the context that Flickr provides. So beyond just the title and the description, the Flickr feature where you can annotate images with notes, does anybody know about that? That's like one of the most underused cool things in Flickr. Of course, the auto mapping, because either they did it within Flickr or with their phone, etc. It's part of groups. Down the page, you got Creative Commons and tags. It doesn't take much to add this context to your Flickr photos, and it just adds so much more for other people to get something out of it. So my plea is, please caption and tag your photos, damn it. So photography. How do you get to be a better photographer? You know, you could go to class, and a lot of people, does anybody say this? I say it all the time. I'm not a good photographer. But you guys don't.
No, I
okay. All right. And it's good to be self-critical, of course, but you know, how can you get to be better? You know, we all definitely want to be better at what we do. And there's this notion that if you do something, spend 10,000 hours doing it, that you can get better. This guy wrote about it. He didn't invent it. It was some psychologist from Florida State, I think. And the piece I remember about the paper was they did a lot of work at looking like how much time the Beatles put into their music craft before they got famous and the hours they put into playing and practicing in the German clubs. And whether it's 10,000 hours or not really doesn't matter. But what it says is that to be really good at something, that you've got to keep doing it. But you can get better by just doing it. And I've been doing some calculations by the number of photos that I have on Flickr, and I'm not even at 5,000 hours, and that includes taking the photos and processing, et cetera. So I feel like I have a long way to go. So I love the daily practice things. A lot of people here aren't familiar with it. A lot of people probably do it. This was one group that I got into, a 365 photos group. There's about 3,000 of these on Flickr, which is cool. The URL has 366 because we started in a leap year. And just kept the group going. So if you're wondering about that. But for just a little history, this started in 2007 with this guy over here, Darcy Norman. He did his own photo a day project and posted on Flickr. And I remember at the end of the year, he put his photos together in a movie and said, "This was really great and exhausting. I learned to look at the world differently, but I don't know if I'm going to do it again." And I commented on his blog. Well, I admired it, and I said, "Well, I'll try it if you will again." So he started up a Flickr group. Basically, it was just a group, and we announced it to our folks, again, through our blogs. Was Twitter even around? Let's see, 2000? No, I wasn't using Twitter. Well, maybe a little bit. But 2008, we had maybe 50. And there's nothing, no one runs this group. Darcy actually dropped out for a couple years, but it kept going, and people would join on their own. And right now, there's about 700 people in it. And they share what they do, and there's a lot of commenting going on with the Flickr. So last year, I asked some people who have been doing this just to share their responses, and a lot of people just says that they make new connections. They discover people they wouldn't have had common interests with before, and they start opening more communications outside of photography. So that whole thing about expanding networks and getting to appreciate. And this really works because people not only post their photos, but they comment on each other's photos, and that's a huge part of what makes this successful. Kathy O, really for her, it's that the whole thing about communicating your condition and your space, etc., and sharing with that world. And to her, although it's an isolated single activity, it brings people together. And probably a lot of people in the room can grok with that. Another one that I started doing about 2 years ago is the Daily Shoot. Anybody do this one? Daily Shoot? No, no Daily Shooters. I stopped too. But it was a great idea that it came across. So if you're doing a daily photo thing, you have to come up with what you're going to do that day, or at least hope you got one that came in. This one provides some, you know, a target for you to go after. So every day they tweet out an assignment, and that's sort of the thing that you have to do. So on this day, tell a story of a subject by a photograph, by photographing one detail in it. Sometimes it's a color, sometimes it's a photographic technique. But it's say, how do you interpret this one specific assignment? So people take their photos, they post it on any number of sharing sites, they tweet it back with a hashtag, and it all gets aggregated on the site. The best part is that all they really intend for people is it's not about doing it every day, so you don't have to apologize if you miss days. It's really just about making it an everyday practice. And you're not going to get punished if you miss a day, and you're not going to get any extra credit if you do it every day. It's really just for you to become a better photographer. And I like that philosophy. So again, they will send their tweet out with an assignment. You can go on the site. It's kind of elegantly structured. They've aggregated all the assignments with a hashtag automatically into each day. They keep track of all the photographers. I was on the list. I'm falling off the list because I stopped doing it. But you sort of end up with your own archive of your daily shoots on there. So it's interesting. When I was setting up this presentation, I asked some people in my network to share some of their earliest daily shoots with their later ones, because I was interested to see what happened in their development. I know that John King, he is a photographer, and this is not really a bad photo. It's kind of interesting. I don't know if the subject is the lamp or the pot or the chair, et cetera, and we sort of get a setting. And it's not technically it's a really good photograph. It's got good colors and exposure. But later on, he's doing some things with experimenting with low saturation. Maybe there's a little bit more of a suggestion of some sort of message here. You know, there's a passageway between two rooms. You know, what is the difference between light coming in and books on the window? Different framing angle instead of straight on. And maybe I'm just wildly interpreting this, but I asked him to sort of show me an example of more or less before and after. And again, I asked him for his comments. So to him, the commenting part was really key, and that's a big motivator for being able to go on in this. I know sometimes when people are doing these daily things, they feel like, you know, no one's listening, no one's watching. And it doesn't take much to leave a comment. My good friend and colleague, Jabiz, he teaches now in Indonesia. He takes great photographs. Early one of his, this is kind of interesting subject. It's a plane or half a plane in the woods, maybe. And it's not bad, again, and I like it. It's interesting. But he really got into using his up close and depth of field. And you get the lights of reflecting in the glass there. And that's a really powerful image. You know, and again, for him, doing daily photos kind of gets him out of his ruts and trying new things. And he's got some great photos to show it. Another woman, I think the assignment here was chaos. And this is a good shot for the assignment. This shows chaos. It's the desk. And it actually, I can't say anything wrong about that one. But again, she got more into focusing on the detail. She's experimenting here with some monochroming, et cetera. And it's a really powerful image. And most people who do this have the statement about they look at the world differently. And most people who've done this, you know, that's the most common thing that people talk about is that whole practice of looking at the world for details that you would walk by is very illuminating. So again, in the daily shoot, you get to aggregate everything together. It happens kind of automatically. It's really nice. Some of Jim Groom's students did this for assignment in an online class last year. The assignment for this was preparedness. And this is... This is really dramatic lighting, and I love this photo, but I really like what the student wrote about it on his blog. That, and this was my experience. I would, like, look at the assignment in the beginning of the day, and I'd try to, like, get that in the back of my mind, so I'd be thinking about it all day long. And he started thinking about Leatherman's as being something on preparedness, and he was worried about making it interesting. He just didn't want a picture of a knife sitting somewhere. In this case, he used the lighting, used an old object, and used really dramatic lighting to make it stand out. And again, you know, some of the constraintness of an assignment is actually really liberating in terms of your creativity, and that's an interesting dichotomy. Another set, this again from this guy, Jabiz, the assignment was liquids or something, and usually people think about glasses of water or ponds or fountains, etc. You know, and who would ever take notice of these, like, ugly buckets of mud? But that really fit the assignment for him. And for him, the fact of, like, going from the first reflex to thinking about it a lot more says a lot about his growth as a photographer. And my colleague of mine, Tom Woodward, who's an educator in Virginia, did some of the bravest thing, I thought. There's this whole movement of people who take pictures of strangers. So, you know, the basic practice is... Hi, my name is Alan.
Can I take a picture of you and post it on the internet?
I am. I know you're good. But I'm still working on that, and I'm gonna try to practice that. But that's terrifying. Does anybody not find that disturbing? I mean, you know, your first thought is they're gonna punch you in the face, etc. And Tom blogged about this, and for him it was just getting. He wanted to take that on as a challenge. But this is one of my favorite ones because I can't figure out this guy's expression. He looks kind of suspicious, but he looks a little bit, like, mischievous. It's just a rich photograph, and some of that just because, it's not because of the photo, it's this kind of tension and play between the photographer and the subject. So, you know, Tom's quote again, the whole thing about him, it was like setting a bar for something maybe he wasn't comfortable doing. And again, he gave the site out, 100strangers.com, it's a Flickr group, and there's a lot of people who do it. Another student photo, this is just amazing. I mean, who would ever look at a spiral notebook and create that kind of image? And that's powerful. This is an undergraduate student. And again, the same expression, looking at it more, looking at the world differently, a different way to go about being creative. And sometimes you get to it by relaxing and not focusing. Like, I got to find that unique picture. I don't know. I've had this experience a lot where I'm like saying, I'm not going to find anything. And something just seems to materialize. And it only comes when I like stop worrying about it and relax and just go out in the world and let it happen. And then sometimes it doesn't happen. I have to take a picture of a salt shaker or something in my house. So just sort of some broad things, and this is nothing controversial, but when I first did this talk, it was to a bunch of group of educators. So I wanted to make the leap between this idea of learning something that you want to in a format that really you learn by doing, and that's what the daily photography stuff does. I mean, you can get better at it just by doing it. And I think it's natural. Just if you stick with it and do it every day, you're going to refine it, especially when you're looking back and reflecting on it. So the motivation, why you're doing it matters, is incredibly, and that goes for everything. Also, the Flickr group and the daily shoot thing, doing this stuff in public in a shared space matters. If I was just doing this on my own and you know, giving pictures to my friends, that would be nice. But doing this in a shared space just creates, again, more of that feedback that causes us to want to do things. Doing it with others, anything that we do, learning, photography, dancing, playing music, it just matters much more, especially when you get this kind of feedback. And in this case, you know, I'm guessing that the teacher behind the camera there, but you know, she's not like, you know, she's not on the camera. She's helping the kids do it themselves. And I just love the expression of that girl with the red jacket on. I mean, yeah. She is in the game. I mean, she's not bored in class. And again, I think this is really key for me, but we really, some of this stuff, and it doesn't go for everything, but just this whole process, learning by doing, really matters. I don't know what this guy is doing, but you couldn't do that from a book. So one of my questions is, what else besides photography would sort of, you know, work? And there are people who do daily writing assignments, but it's an open-ended question. What can we sort of become better at by doing it every day? So, you know, I might, yeah.
I was homesick from my job, which I retired from now, but I was homesick for 4 months, and I'm a photographer, so taking a picture every day would have been simple. So I went and got a book and a drawing pen, and I drew a drawing each day. Sometimes it was 2 minutes to midnight I was doing the drawing, you know, but somewhere I was mostly in the house, and I just would, you know, do one drawing and date it. And I found that really challenging, and I really learned a lot about, you know, allotting time even for a simple thing like drawing, and learned a little bit about drawing.
That's great, Beth. So what was the motivation? I mean, what was the driving force?
I wanted to keep a diary of my illness at home, have little touchstones, but I didn't want to write it anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you had a high amount of motivation to do that. And the discipline, that thing you talk about, like, you know, I got to get this done by midnight. And I've done that a lot. I got
to
get something, but that makes it work. So, it, open-ended question, but I think there's a lot of other things that we could do better at by doing it every day. I think mine might be exercise, but I'm still working on that. So, my little assignment to do after this is to... maybe go back and think about the picture you took, which is obviously, and of course you guys are a lot of photographers in here, but you know, I hope that sort of talking about things like framing, composition, how you interact with your subject, would you go about photos now more of in a thinking mode and less of just a quick snapshot? And I don't mean to demean snapshots. I take a lot of snapshots, but my favorite photos are usually the ones that I've done some work at, not intense work, but things that I've made some conscious decisions when I'm doing my photography. So if in the next X number of hours at the conference, try to find someone and make a photo of them that shows how excited they are to be at Northern Voice. Send it to that same website. It'll go up there. All the stuff that I mentioned on this and the slides are up at that URL. And... Brian's been flashing me my signs. I'm in on time, right?
Yeah, I realize, of course, for one of the scheduling quirks is that, of course, the next session actually will be supposed to begin in 5 minutes, so that's why I kind of gave you 10 and 5 and then 2 minutes of each other.
That's cool. Watch this guy. He's good. Get out there with your cameras and make some art, damn it.